This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the 115th Congress is wasting no time in their mission to undo the Obama era of big, intrusive, and costly government. Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn will join me from the House floor to detail her efforts to cut government spending. She'll also give us the latest on the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives, which released their final report earlier today. Also, continuing our look at the confirmation process, will liberals really try to stop the confirmation of Senator Jeff Sessions for Attorney General? Former Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell has the answer, or at least I think he will. And former Ohio Congressman Bob McEwen joins us to talk about the State Department and the focus on pushing liberal social policy, which has compromised the State Department's mission. All that and more on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. By the way, I want to encourage you to sign up at TonyPerkins.com for our daily update, which comes out with kind of information you're not going to get anyplace else. What's happening here in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill and around the country as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom, and also our legislative alerts, which will give you real-time information on how you can make a difference. It's going to be critical, absolutely critical, as we were talking about yesterday, these first 6 months in helping advance good stuff and stop bad stuff, quite frankly. I mean, just because the election went the way that many wanted it to doesn't mean everything is going to be just fine without your participation. In fact, more so is your participation needed now than ever before. We've got a short time frame to get this stuff fixed, and everybody's got to be involved. All right, speaking of getting involved, the new Congress is wasting no time in starting the process of undoing 8 years of big, intrusive, and ineffective government. Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn is with us from the House floor where all the action is right now. Marsha, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It is so good to be with you. Thank you.
Well, Happy New Year, and I know that there is a lot of work to be done, and you're already doing it. You have today, in fact, introduced legislation to cut government spending.
Absolutely. Every Congress, I introduce three bills, a 1%, 2%, and 5% across the board spending cut. And this is something I think is just so vitally important to do because we have $20 trillion in debt. We are out of money, if you will. It is important that we make sure that we do our best to get the spending under control. And you will remember in 2011 when we did the Budget Control Act, we got the 2% across the board spending cut then. And it saved us about a half trillion dollars a year. So we know that across the board cuts work. They work in the states. And what the federal government needs to do is save a penny out of every dollar that they spend and then compound those savings every single year over a 10-year period, and it'll be $1 trillion worth of cut and reduced spending by the time you get to the 10-year window of that budget.
So, Congresswoman, under the incoming administration, do you think the political terrain there on Capitol Hill is going to be more receptive to this approach to more responsible government?
Absolutely, I do. I really do. And I was pleased to see that our Treasury Secretary nominee had suggested that the 1% across the board cut, or the penny plan, as he calls it, would make a significant difference because it compounds your savings. You know, if you have a federal agency, let's say the EPA, and they get their budget, then they are required by law to go in and cut a penny out of a dollar, or if we do the 2%, they cut two pennies out of the dollar, or the 5%, five pennies out of the dollar. And over time, like I said, that adds up. And it is the fair thing to do for our children and grandchildren, for future generations, because not only do we have to get to the point that we do a balanced budget every year, we have to get to the point that we are paying down this debt so that the interest on the debt doesn't eat us up in years to come.
Yeah, and this is a way to eliminate that excuse. Well, we just can't bite the bullet and we can't balance the budget right now.
Right.
But you can certainly take one penny out of every dollar. It is a step
right.
in the right direction. It is the least that we can do in terms of responsible government. And speaking of responsible government, today the Select Panel on Infant Lives released their report. You chaired that Select Investigative Panel. What did you discover now that you have been doing this investigation now for almost a year?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for allowing me to, over the last year, as the Select Investigative Panel worked, to come on and talk with your listeners about the work that we were doing. What we found as we investigated big abortion was some troubling links between abortion clinics and procurement industry providers in their business model. What we saw was individuals, these procurement businesses who traffic in the fetal body parts, they were putting these abortion clinics under contract. So thereby, the woman and her unborn child became a profit center for the abortion clinic and for the procurement business. And when that happens, what you see take place is a change in that relationship because those procurement businesses are looking for fetuses at certain gestational ages so that they can extract certain parts because they have a website and they put up those parts and gestate, whether it's hearts or lungs or livers or hands or tongues or whatever. And they put up the parts with the gestational age and then the price. And individuals can go in and order. So see, Tony, what you do is change that relationship. And that was very troubling to us. We also were worried about violations of HIPAA, where a woman's privacy when she goes into the abortion clinic would be violated. We found examples of that. We ended up doing 15 criminal and regulatory referrals and sent that information onto the private to the particular entities and those states' attorney generals so that they can investigate. And so that is one thing that we saw. With the abortion providers, we were quite troubled by the fungibility, if you will, of federal funds, taxpayer dollars that were going into some of these entities. What we have as a recommendation is that we codify the Hyde Amendment language to make certain that no taxpayer funds go into providing abortions, and that if a women's health care clinic provides both abortions and women's health, then they would not be eligible for those Title X taxpayer funds. But women's health clinics, all that money should be going into women's health and not going into entities that do abortion and also claim to do women's health. So right. Those are some of the findings that we have.
Now,
your listeners can go to my website, pull down the whole report, and have a read of it. It's only about 400 and something pages.
Yeah, it'd be good nighttime reading. Because of the Select Panel's investigation and the referral that you made reference to a moment ago, actually criminal charges has been sought in a couple of cases.
That is exactly right. And, you know, we have now completed our work. We have made our recommendations for changes in federal law, federal statute. We've made those recommendations to the authorizing committees and to the speaker. We have made our criminal referrals, and we are like everybody else. We will wait and see. We're hopeful that a new Justice Department and attorney generals in the states will do something with the criminal referrals, if they will take the appropriate action. And we'll be watching, like everybody else, to see what kind of action the authorizing committees will make in the changes to federal law.
Are you pretty optimistic that we will see some legislation to change federal law to bring law into alignment with the findings of your committee?
Yes, I am very hopeful. You know, one of the things as we work through this, and there'd been all of this conversation about, well, fetal tissue is needed for research. And Tony, what we found by working with researchers and innovators and scientists was, and the NIH, was that fresh fetal tissue is only used in about one out of every 100,000 research projects. And there's not this overwhelming need when it comes to NIH research projects. So what we said, well, look, why don't we, if someone has lost a child, they have a miscarriage or they have a stillborn birth, allow them through the organ donor program to donate if they choose to do that. And then it takes away this entire middleman procurement business and that gray area where you look at these dollars that they are charging for what they're paying to the abortion clinic to get a sample of fresh fetal tissue and then what they're selling it for. And it's a felony to sell human tissue in the country. So we say, look, let's move this into the organ donor program, and it will function like all other organ donations. And it completely takes away the opportunity for someone to have that very sordid type business that is procuring fetal body parts and then reselling or transferring or trafficking those
parts.
It
takes the profit out. That's the incentive.
If you donate, you're within the law.
Right.
If you make even a penny of profit, you are outside the law.
Right, and that's what you're doing here. You're addressing that profit, that incentive to violate the law in this case.
That's right.
Well, I want to commend you, Congresswoman, for the work that you did on this select investigative panel in seeing this thing through. I mean, a lot of times Congress will take one of these things up and the issues get lost because the next pressing matter comes along. You stayed with us. You did the work. We're already seeing fruit from it, and we anticipate seeing more from it as we see legislation introduced to change federal law. So thank you for your diligence, and thank you for keeping us up to date, Marcia.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Bye-bye now.
All right. Congresswoman Marcia Blackburn of Tennessee, as we just were discussing, she was the chairperson for the Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives. They issued their report today with recommendations for changes in federal law. So we'll be watching that very closely and working with members to advance that and get that through. By the way, some of the stuff that the committee is, or the panel is advocating, is just going back to what the law used to be prior to King Obama coming in. All right, we're going to be talking about, a little bit later, we're going to talk about Obamacare. Vice President-elect Mike Pence on Capitol Hill today working with the Republicans to chart out a course to repeal Obamacare. Minority Leader Chuck Schumer in the Senate had some comments. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. Also, the confirmation process begins in earnest next week with Senator Jeff Sessions. Democrats making a lot of noise, but can they stop him? Former Secretary of State for the state of Ohio, Ken Blackwell, is here after the break. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Can a Facebook post save a life? Or a tweet or an Instagram picture? At Family Research Council's 12th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, pro-life activists from around the country will gather to explore the impact that digital media has on the culture of human life. Watch free online the morning of Friday, January 27th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, activists, and testimonies from families and individuals who choose life. At the intersection of cutting-edge technology and a passion for the lives of the unborn, you'll be educated and empowered to better reach your community on platforms like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and more. You'll be better prepared to make an impact for the pro-life movement anytime and anywhere. Also, see live coverage from the National Mall as the March for Life gets underway. Tune in on January 27th at frc.org/prolifecon. Again, visit frc.org/pro-life-con for more information.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The day begins. Gotta run. Late start. Quick breakfast. Wish I hadn't stayed up so late last night. What about time in devotions? Time in prayer, Bible reading, working, thinking, breathing without the mind of Christ to begin the day is so unwise, but so like us as human beings, prone to wander. We tend to think our way is the way, yet our ways are not His ways. That's why we need to stop and take time at the start of each day seeking God's help, His correction, His leading, as we prepare to live for Him, not for ourselves. Devotions, time with God, praying for God's help, grace, mercy, and direction. Not taking time with the Lord is, to start your day, compromised. Seek first the kingdom of God, dear friend, and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
I think income ultimately is the most important thing that we protect. I know one thing, and I know this from sitting across a lot of tables from a lot of people over the years, that at some point in time, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 85, there will be a point in time where the only thing you care about is how much income you have coming in. Don't let your portfolio be 100% subject to the volatility in the markets or dependent upon the market. Shore up some permanent income, along with Social Security and your maybe a pension, have some charitable gift annuity to shore that up. I hope you'll call the AFA Foundation today and find out more detail about a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you are on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. All right, next week, we'll see the first of the confirmation hearings beginning. Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions has been tapped to be Attorney General of the United States. Great guy. I've had him on the program before, worked with him on a number of things. The Democrats don't like it. Maybe it's because he abides by the law and he likes the Constitution. That's a foreign concept over there under the current leadership. Democrats saying they're going to block him or at least make it difficult. I think it's going to be difficult for them to stop him. He's very mild-mannered, congenial, gets along with his colleagues quite well. And, you know, a lot of these, one of these factors is that the senators always think that they may have another option somewhere down the road. And a key spot in any administration requires confirmation. So it's not like they're going to really beat up on somebody else who might have the opportunity to beat up on them later. So I think he gets through without much problem at all, but there is a lot of outside noise. Well, joining us now to talk a little bit more about this and other matters as it pertains to the transition of the incoming Trump administration is Ken Blackwell, Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance here at the Family Research Council, but he is also a member of the transition team. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, good to be with you.
All right. Do the Democrats have any hopes of really stopping Jeff Sessions' nomination for Attorney General?
Ultimately, the answer to that question is no. I think Senator Sessions has the numbers, but what they will try to do is to define him or misdefine him and then try to destroy his effectiveness as the Attorney General. What's important for us to do here is to make sure that we counter this false narrative, an accurate and true picture of who Jeff Sessions is. I did a piece that was published in the Washington Times on their op-ed pages, and I think it's important to go there because part of what they're doing is trying to create an image that a white conservative from Alabama cannot be a fair and effective attorney general. That is a false narrative. It is a misleading lie because all you have to do, and as you just indicated, is to listen and know and observe Jeff Sessions. He is a Bible-believing Christian who believes in the rule of law. And if you look at his 20-year record in Congress, in the Senate, he has been a person that has worked with in a bipartisan fashion, and he's worked on legislation that the likes of Teddy Kennedy and other Democrats have championed his involvement with the crafting of real important legislation. So, you know, when you have two of the leading newspapers in the nation go on this mission of misdefining Jeff Sessions, not only is it disturbing, it sends out a clear signal that it must be countered, not only with the truth, but with the sort of advocacy that suggested, you know, a wide cut of the American population believes that Jeff Sessions is the sort of attorney general that we need that will get us back to a respect for the rule of law and respect for those in law enforcement of all ethnicities and races who are on the front line to provide us safety in our homes and neighborhoods.
Yeah, by the way, folks, you can read Ken's piece. You go to TonyPerkins.com. It's up there. It's as he mentioned, the Washington Times also had a piece up there for you. A media news for Jeff Sessions. He's a white son of the South, and that's enough to justify a lynching. Pretty hard-hitting as you take on the left. And this whole, you know, it's like the race card that they want to play. And so anybody from the South that they want to discredit, they just throw this this out there. And you know what?
Absolutely.
It's. I think there's two sides to this, or there's two aspects of this. One, they want to beat him up a little bit. They're not gonna succeed. I mean, watch him next week in these confirmation hearings. He's gonna do stellar. I mean, he's gonna be stellar. He's gonna do quite well. But I think Ken, and you tell me if I'm wrong on this or not. But I think part of this is to try to send a message to others that, hey, think twice before you step into the government arena because we're going to come after you and beat you up.
Oh, yeah, that's part of the message. The other part of the message is that I think they're starting to realize now that the GOP is the clear majority party in the nation. Now, that's both a blessing and a potential curse. It is a blessing in that there's no more excuse for us to not move forth on an agenda that puts the harness back on government and optimizes individual liberty, that respects the fact that the family is the incubator of liberty in our culture, not more government. Now, that's the blessing. The curse is if, in fact, the Republican Party misses this opportunity to be true to those things that got Trump over 300 electoral college votes. And that was because, you know, he stopped treating people as flyover country in middle America. He, in fact, did it in his own way, but he gave voice to not only their aspirations, but their concerns. And Jeff Sessions was an early, advocate of his candidacy, and I think he will be an outstanding attorney general.
I agree. Ken, we're up against a break. Thanks so much for joining us. Great to talk with you this afternoon. We'll talk next week when this confirmation hearing gets underway.
Sounds great, Tony. All the best.
All right, Ken Blackwell, former Secretary of State of Ohio. Speaking of Ohio, our next guest, six-term congressman from Ohio. We'll be talking about the State Department and the liberal social policy that's been pushed there in recent years to the detriment of its major mission. We'll talk about that next. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
U.S. stocks are set for another rally. Early this week, they continue to see the Dow inching a little bit closer to that 20,000 level as we see positive news continuing throughout the global markets. Last look, to start the week, we saw the NASDAQ up close to 1%, S&P the same. So markets are very, very happy right now, and everybody seems to be thinking very, very positive. Oil prices rise again, and they continue to rise on signs that OPEC members are going to stick to the output pledges that they made. I'm not 100% convinced of that, but certainly it looks like they're going to be very satisfied with $55 a barrel oil prices. But look, if they start to lose market share, all of that is going to change. Eurozone inflation hits the highest level since 2013. That is very good news. The Eurozone, the central banks of the European nations, have done everything they possibly can to try to increase inflation, including negative interest rates. Nothing seems to have worked. But all of a sudden now we are looking at inflation at about 1.1%. This is very good news for the Eurozone. The downside to it is it reinforces the fact our negative interest rates working. The UK still seeing some good news as consumer credit hit a 12-year high for the month of November.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for joining us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com if you're on Twitter. At T. Perkins, keep you up to date on what's happening here in our nation's capital and across the country. Tomorrow afternoon, we're going to be joined by the Lieutenant Governor of Texas. Dan Patrick's going to be on the program tomorrow afternoon, so you want to tune in for that. Some news coming out of Texas tomorrow. A lot happening here as well. One of the things we've been talking about, and there's been some out there that have made the statement that the State Department is not involved in social policy. Well, I'm not quite sure where those folks have been. But under the Obama administration, that's almost all the State Department has focused on. It is, and it's been strong-arming other countries to adopt its twisted view on a number of things. For instance, abortion. We were just talking with Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn about the Hyde Amendment and that firewall so that American taxpayers are not forced to fund abortions, elective abortions. That's been the policy in our foreign policy as well. But what we've seen through the State Department is that they've actually been using tax dollars to, in the form of foreign aid, to force other countries to change their policies, to liberalize their laws, to allow for abortions in different areas, different ways, funding means that those countries were opposed to. A lot in the African countries that have strong Catholic backgrounds have been opposed to this. They've also been pushing, as we talked yesterday, about the LGBT agenda, using your tax dollars through foreign aid to force countries to change their laws and things such as even their elected officials marching in gay pride parades. They get dinged from the State Department if they don't do that, and they lose foreign aid. That's what's been happening. And it's not going to be self-correcting. You got to have somebody go in the State Department. The next Secretary of State's got to be willing to change those things. And that's why I've expressed some reservations about Rex Tillerson, who was the chairman of the Boy Scouts when he opened the door to homosexuality in the Boy Scouts. This has serious implications for what the State Department should be focused on. Bob McEwen is former Republican congressman from Ohio, served six terms. He's now the executive director of the Council for National Policy. He was elected by his colleagues to serve on the Select Committee on Intelligence in the House when he served there. He also has extensive experience in working with elected leaders in the Balkans, and he joins us now to talk more about this. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, always an honor to be with you. Thank you.
Well, I was just discussing how under the Obama administration, especially, not that it just started there, but has been fueled by the Obama administration under Hillary Clinton and others to push this social, liberal social policy using foreign aid and other means on other countries. You've seen that firsthand as you've interacted with some of these foreign leaders as well.
And it's a constant report that we hear. The presidential prayer breakfast will be in just a couple of weeks. As these people come from around the world, they mention the United States is held as the standard in the world. And the standard for human rights is established by the U.S. State Department. And the criteria that they've begun to use in recent years, particularly under Hillary Clinton and the bureaucracy in the State Department, is to further an agenda that doesn't have anything to do with America. It has to do with their own political agenda. And you and I and others have a real concern as to who heads the State Department, if they're strong enough to take on that bureaucracy to represent our values, or are they going to be captives as General Colin Powell, a four-star general, that when he became Secretary of State, he let the word go forth immediately in which he said, "We will take care of the Foreign Service, and they will take care of us." In other words, we're not going to rock the boat. We're not going to do anything. And America is judged by the representation, the embassies and the ambassadors and other representatives that we have around the world. And when they come in and make these bizarre demands to further it's not just a political agenda, it's actually a spiritual agenda, then it's very disconcerting to people who share our values and love our country and are put upon by these representatives.
Bob, we're almost up against a break. So if we run out of time, I want to see if you'll hold on for a couple minutes because I want folks to understand how they're doing this. How is the State Department, these activists that have been brought in through Hillary Clinton and through John Kerry, how are they forcing this on other countries? And when I say this, I'm talking about abortion, pro-abortion policies, the LGBT agenda. How are they going about that?
They're very good. Well, particularly George Soros sets up these NGOs, these non-government organizations, and goes in and gets the most anti-American operatives. And then once they're up and running, then the State Department, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, comes in and begins to fund these people on the American tax dollars' dime. And so when we see these demonstrations, when we see these activities take place in these foreign countries, we say, why is it they dislike America so much? It's totally startling to the average American to believe that his tax dollars were funding all of that.
All right, Bob, we're up against that break I warned about. Can you stick around for 2 minutes? I got another question for you on this topic. All right, folks, talking with former Congressman Bob McEwen of Ohio, talking about the State Department, how it's been used by the Obama administration to advance a very liberal social agenda and how that is ingrained. It's going to have to be purged. That agenda is going to have to be purged. We're going to talk about that more when we return. Don't go away.
After crossing the Jordan River into the Promised Land, God instructed the children of Israel to take stones from the river and make a memorial. When their future children would say, "What do these stones mean?" the parents would recount the Lord's deliverance of Israel from slavery and Israel's arrival in the Promised Land. In each of our lives, there are events that ought to be remembered, events where the Lord moved and delivered us. Whether we use stones, photos, or special celebrations, it matters only that we take time to remember what the Lord has done and pass that testimony on to future generations.
Since 1977, the American Family Association has been informing, equipping, and activating individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of America. The Lord has given us many victories over the years that laid the foundation for our work today and into the future. Learn more at afa.net.
Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Wesley Biblical Seminary provides a solid foundation based upon the inerrancy of the Bible and the call to holy living. Online or at our Jackson, Mississippi or Greenwood, Indiana campuses, our academically rigorous learning community will add incredible value to your Christian experience. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning ignite with passion for Christ. WBS.edu.
It's our first liberty, freedom of religion. An easy way to show your support for the First Amendment is with the Freedom of Religion buttons from the American Family Association. They're conversation starters and demonstrate what it means to have religious freedom in America. They're also a way to bring attention to how the First Amendment is under assault today. It needs support now more than ever. Get a pack of Freedom of Religion buttons at afastore.net.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 1,790 families have had their homes rebuilt because of you, the listener at American Family Radio, when you've partnered with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims to no fault of their own who lose everything to see volunteers show up and help them rebuild. 2 years ago, we started a rapid response division that goes within 72 hours and since then have gone to 15 communities across America. Would you consider becoming a part of 8 Days of Hope as we continue to look for ways to grow the ministry in 2017, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well. Please continue to pray for the ministry as we look forward to what God has in store for us. Thank you so much for your prayers, your financial support, and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
AFR urges you to support the ministry of 8 Days of Hope at 8daysofhope.com.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website, tonyperkins.com. All right, talking with former Ohio Congressman Bob McEwen, now Executive Director of the Council for National Policy, discussing the critical nature of the State Department when it comes to advancing really the image of America, but how it's been used in under this present administration to advance a very radical social agenda, forcing other countries to adopt policies that even we don't even have in this country. And using your tax dollars through foreign aid to accomplish that. Bob, thanks for sticking around. I know you continue to be active with foreign leaders as you were a part of the Balkans and other places when those countries came about, and you've been continuing to speak and work in that region of the world. And many countries actually, believe it or not, are more conservative than we are when it comes to their social policy because they have very strong religious roots in those countries. And they are being forced by the State Department to change their laws and policies to be in alignment, not with necessarily Congress, but with the state, these activists at the State Department.
Yeah, Tony, as you know, our country was founded on the separation of the government coming into the church. There was a separation between the state and the church. And interestingly enough, our government is now forcing a religion upon these individual countries. You know, one of the things is that there's a human rights report that is done by the State Department that's the standard for the world. Just as anybody on the high seas knows that they're being hijacked, they can appeal to any freighter that has an American flag or the American Navy. It's the standard for righteousness in the world, and it has to do with human rights as well. And in order to meet the human rights standard for the State Department that makes this report each year, our ambassadors under President Obama, and in the process of this, we just cannot help but rejoice at the success that we had in November to change direction, because Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was demanding that in order for nations to have a human rights approval from the United States, that they must engage in a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender policy that would legalize this kind of marriage, and then demanded that they begin to have parades. And I was at a meeting this year in which there were four defense ministers there at this meeting, the retreat that we had. And they were explaining the frustration that they have with the American embassies, as any congressman encounters around the globe. And they mentioned how that this year the State Department docked them on their human rights record if the government did not have a sufficient number of ministers. That's minister of foreign that's defense minister or finance minister or foreign ministers. If they didn't have enough leaders of the ministers marching in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender parade. Now, interestingly enough, when I saw a question was being asked to from a friendly reporter to Mrs. Clinton during a couple weeks before the election, and said, "What successes did you have as the Secretary of State?" And of course, as you know, if you put your finger down any place on the globe, were worse off than when they took office. And so she really couldn't. So she mentioned about restoring respect for America, and I feel that I recommend. And then she said this. She said, "We were able to advance the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender agenda." And that was really the only accomplishment that she could point to. So that department, it has an agenda that is not necessarily pro-American, but has an agenda that is really a violation of the separation of church and state. And what most people, Americans, don't understand is that United States ambassadors were not born in America. They speak with accents. They grew up elsewhere. But they were a part of the foreign policy cabal that has captivated the State Department. And now they put their agenda, and they have literally contempt. Do I have enough time to make one more reference?
Yeah, go right ahead.
I was grabbing off of my shelf here. The book is called With Reagan. It's by Ed Meese, in which he mentions how that Ronald Reagan wrote a letter to a foreign leader and expressed his concerns and what he wanted to accomplish. And then it has a copy of the State Department cable that went out to all of the ambassadors and others in the region and said, "Notwithstanding Mr. Reagan's letter, policy has not changed." And then violated everything that the president had just said.
And that was under his administration.
Under his administration. It's much, much worse 30 years later. That was when they still pretended, just like the media pretended as though they were unbiased. And the bureaucracy pretended as though it was working for the leaders. Now the media is out front in its opposition to what we stand for. And the bureaucracy is as well. And I believe this nation was fortunate to dodge a bullet that took place last November in allowing Hillary Clinton to continue down that road. It's going to be a battle, and it's going to be it's a battle worth saving.
Well, and that's the point I want to drive home. So you just said there, making that reference to Ronald Reagan. I'm glad you actually made that reference. Is that here was a very decisive, clear conservative who made clear what he wanted in the State Department, but yet the career bureaucrats in the State Department, notwithstanding what the president has said, this is what we're doing. And my point is that just because there was an election, just because you have a Republican president, does not mean the policies at the State Department that have been pushing these liberal agendas are going to change without deliberate, intentional leadership.
You're 100% correct, Tony. That's exactly the case.
One final question for you, Bob, and thanks for sticking around. Your experience in Congress, six terms in Congress, did a lot of work. As it mentioned, you were a part of the Selected Committee on Intelligence, which oversees our nation's secrets. The one aspect of the State Department, all this we just talked about troubles me greatly, but it's how the State Department pushes this through these foreign service officers onto these foreign countries, but they also push it through the United Nations, which then leans on the United States and has influence over even some of our policies.
There's no question about it. And the thing is that the sunlight is the greatest for cleansing.
And disinfect.
People always like to... Yeah, exactly. Thank you. For those that hide in the bushes, they want to operate subterraneanly. And what they do in these meetings that they have. They make these various commitments that do not go through the elected representatives. The Congress never sees it.
Right.
And yet they begin to operate with their funds. And USAID is a perfect example. USAID, and let me just say that this is not new. It's gotten worse in recent years.
Right.
But let me just tell you what's been said for years around the globe, not by Americans, but by people living there. The reason they say, and I've heard this dozens of times, they say the reason America is free is because it doesn't have an American embassy. Now, what does that mean? That means that many times the embassies of the United States are stocked with these State Department folk who have contempt for our values and make financial and other support for causes that are anti-American. And there's no better place to make a change than having a strong leader in the State Department that shares our value, and I trust that will be successful. Let me just as an aside, in recent years, for example, the State Department doesn't buy Cadillacs for the ambassadors. They buy BMWs. They don't. Every other nation, Korea buys Korean cars, and Japanese buy Japanese cars, Germans buy Germans cars. The State Department is virtually anti-American, down to so many references that I could quote. But that's why this election was important, and that's why I'm excited that we're going to turn the corner.
Bob McEwen, thanks so much for joining us. As always, talk to you. Thanks. Always good to talk to you. Thanks so much for being with us.
I appreciate you, Tony. All the best. Bye-bye.
All right. Former Ohio Congressman Bob McEwen. There's some very practical things that can be done at the State Department to put an end to this agenda. But as we've talked about, it's got to be deliberate. It's got to be intentional. I mean, as he mentioned, the USAID, that's... This is an organization that was supposed to be creating internationally economic development for these countries, but it's been turned into a slush fund for these special projects. As he mentioned, it's oftentimes going to organizations that George Soros set up to agitate in advance liberal policy. I mean, that needs to be gone. There's a global equity fund. Same thing, another slush fund used to push this kind of agenda. The president has to pick someone at the State Department that's willing to take on this deeply ingrained agenda driven by activists that have, some have already been there, but many brought in during the Obama years. 8 years is a long time to put people into, really embed them in these agencies. And liberals tend to be attracted to government. Conservatives attracted to business and other things. Liberals to government because they like to use other people's money to advance their ideology. And that's what they're doing. Good tax dollars. Forced people to fund their indoctrination that they do. So this is why this is a big deal with what Donald Trump is doing by tapping Rex Tillerson as the next Secretary of State, because he has shown he does not have the backbone to stand up to this agenda. It's concerning. Again, it can be fixed. They get the other right people around him and they agree to certain things. It can work. I'm just telling you, folks, this will be a big problem unless they... Unless they intentionally go in there to clean up the State Department, it's going to be a nuisance for them. Believe me. All right, I want to go back to, I mentioned at the beginning about Obamacare. Vice President-elect Mike Pence on Capitol Hill today kind of gathering with Republicans to plot out the path to repeal Obamacare. Chuck Schumer got wind of it. And I've got a clip of Chuck Schumer today talking about this. I want you to hear this clip of this is the minority leader, Democratic leader in the Senate. He's now running things. Harry Reid's gone, gone back to Nevada, and so Chuck Schumer of New York is in charge. All right, he's in charge. This is what he had to say:
the Republican plan to cut health care wouldn't make America great again; it would make America sick again and lead to chaos instead of affordable care.
That is so clever. I mean, I wonder how many hours they sat around to think that one up. But that is classic Chuck Schumer. Expect more of that. Now, I'm going to tell you, the guy's smart. I give it to him. He's smart. Now, he's also, and this is kind of, well, I've dealt with him before. When George W. Bush was trying to nominate folks for the court, and the Democrats were in control, and they were blocking his nominees when they were in control of the Senate, and they were blocking his nominees. I think Bill Frist was the majority leader. But it was a thin majority, and they had the 60 vote. This was before the Democrats in this last few years changed the rules to get some of these nominees through. But this was for the courts. It was back at the 60 threshold. I'm going to get my nominations confused here. But anyway, he was blocking people because of their deeply held beliefs. And he was making reference to individuals who, because of their faith, were pro-life. And so because they were Catholic, he was blocking them from having votes up or down on whether or not they should be confirmed. Guy's smart, but he's a street fighter. So now Donald Trump has said that he has a relationship with Chuck Schumer, being from New York, and they're going to work together. It'll be interesting to see if they do. But the Republicans are going to have to be aggressive, and they're going to have to be willing to fight for what they believe in, just as the Democrats did. Remember when Barack Obama came in, the Democrats had control of the House. Remember? They had control of the House as well. And Nancy Pelosi was the Speaker. And that's when they pushed through Obamacare. And I remember, and I've probably shared this story before, but I was having dinner with what was a Blue Dog Democrat. They don't really exist anymore. All the moderate Democrats have basically been pushed out. And, you know, I said the polling showed that they were going to lose control of the House if they pushed this through, because the American people was opposed to Obamacare. And I asked him about it, and he said they know it, but they're willing to use their majority to fundamentally change the country, and they know the Republicans won't undo it. And here we are almost 8 years later, and the Republicans have not undone it, and they did fundamentally change the country. Now the Republicans have the majority in the House and the Senate, and they have control of the White House. Will they have the courage to use their majority to do exactly what they told the American public they would do if they had it? We shall soon see. Now, I do believe that they will do it. I believe that Donald Trump will push this through, but it's going to require members of Congress standing firm and not yielding to the pressure of the media or to the left or to the orchestrated outcries of the George Soros-funded entities. Courage is going to be required. All right, folks, out of time for today. Thanks so much for being with us. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. I hope you will as well. Until then, again, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, you keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.